Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming. Anybody have any questions left over from either last time or from what you read for this week? Why don't we begin that way? Okay, Alice.
Well, this isn't a question, and I hope you don't mind me sharing, but I know today is the 60th anniversary of your ordination to the priesthood. So I want to
Oh, thank you.
congratulate you on that. Once a priest, always a priest, and your ministry continues in even better ways. Anyhow, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, really makes you feel old when you hear the word 60th anniversary. All right, somebody else, Michael?
Morning, Dave.
Hi.
I had a question that stemmed from the readings for last week,
Yeah.
and that I don't think you particularly you did not touch on in your talk, but in your writings, you talked a lot about the vengeance in the context of organized religions. And I was wondering if you, how you, your thoughts on how organized religion has approved of, if not promoted, the idea of vengeance.
Yeah, it makes it sound like it is okay when you notice that it's in the Bible over and over, and in the history of churches, and in wars about religion. It gives the impression that it is a legitimate way to handle conflicts. Whereas what we're saying here is it's certainly a primitive way, but it's not the way of a person who is evolving in spiritual consciousness. Once you're evolving, you would no longer do something such as retaliating because that no longer fits with who you have become. What have we become? We've become those who have found a new way, also called putting on the mind and heart of Christ, if you come from a Christian perspective. Was that what your question was about, or did you have?
Yes, yeah, thank you.
Okay, sure. Hi, Christina. Go ahead.
Hi, Dave. On page 122 of your book, you talk about the willingness to be vulnerable, and it's a requisite to all the three elements of love. And you discuss, like, in our caring, we open ourselves up to being unappreciated, and in our full commitment, we accept the giving of life that we might be betrayed. And in maintaining a connection, we accept the possibility that the other person may abandon us. And I'm confused by it a little, and wondering how can we go into a relationship with our hearts open and have this be a possibility? I don't know. It's just difficult. I was hoping you could talk a little more about it.
Of course, yes, I understand. It's a feature of being human that we might be committed to someone, but it could also happen that we would betray that person in some way. So once you get this, the promise that I'll always be faithful, no longer comes through as a promise any human can truly make, because we're all capable of betrayal in some way. I might not stand up for you, I might not take your back. I might break a confidence. I might be unfaithful. part of vulnerability is acknowledging that that could happen. And when it does happen, I have built inner resources that will help me deal with it rather than retaliate. And that would be true of all three. It's an adult way of looking at it. Mother says to 3-year-old, I'll always be your mother and I'll always care about you. You can trust that. But when you're an adult and someone says that, you can say, thank you, I appreciate that. And know all along, it might not quite work out the way it did with mommy. So that's why we would be vulnerable once we become adults when it comes to relating to other humans. Because they do let us down, they do disappoint us, they sometimes don't come through. I'm going to have to allow that without retaliating. That's the vulnerability. I'm going to allow it. I'm going to speak up. I'm going to say, ouch, no problem. I'm going to have a big fight about it, no problem. But I'm still going to let myself have the feelings that go with it. Hurt, anger, sadness, even fear. Does that answer what you're bringing up?
Yes, and
Say more if you want.
it brings to mind for me that the spiritual practice is really important, because when we act like adults in the world and we try to be adults in the world, you have to have something that's more than what you're going through, something deeper.
And those are the resources that you're building by having a spiritual practice. The spiritual practice is getting you ready to be vulnerable without retaliating.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay, bring it up again if you have other thoughts about it. All right, anybody else? Okay, well, let's go on to our topic today, which is forgiveness. I'm going to share the screen. Tell me if you can all see this. Okay.
Yeah, we can see it.
Thank you. Now, reminder of what we talked about before. Kathy Schneider, would you read this part right here? So this is a little summary of the program we talked about last week. This is the program for the healthy psychological view. Next week, I'm going to talk about the spiritual program, which goes beyond this. Go ahead, Kathy.
Follow the golden rule using a healthy program like this. Pause to feel the appropriate feeling, example, grief, sad, angry, afraid. Say ouch to the offender. Ask to open a dialogue. Forgive and reconcile, continuing the relationship on a better footing, or if dialogue is not possible, discontinue or demote the friendship, let go with goodwill, or keep relating, but at a courteous rather than a close or deep level.
Well, thank you, Kathy. So that's a summary of last time. And someone did question the idea of demoting. So it's up to you if you don't want to demote, if you want to just keep the relationship exactly as it was. When the person says, I don't want to have a dialogue, I don't want to work it out. If you still want to relate in the old way, that's up to you. Okay, any questions about our summary? All right, so we brought up the word forgiveness. So now let's take a look at what we mean by forgiveness. Sandra, would you read this? Make sure you're unmuted.
What is forgiveness? Forgiveness is not excusing or dismissing a hurt. Forgiveness is not a waiving of anger or denying of an injury. We still speak up. We don't permit others to harm us or others again. We are not victims. We are not passive. We are still radical opponents of harm, abuse, or injustice, but we act nonviolently. We take a stand against evil of any kind, but we do no harm. Forgiveness is six letting goes. We let go of blame, ill will, resentment, holding a grudge, demanding contrition or apology, or retaliating.
Thank you, Sandra. So, something happens that offends you, and you feel you're blaming the one who offended you. You have ill will toward that person. You have resentment, which is holding on to the anger. You might even be holding on to a grudge. You demand that that person apologize, or you retaliate. When you don't do those six things, those six letting goes are the equivalent of forgiving. Add those up and you get forgiveness. All right. Esau, are you here?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. Jody, are you here?
I can read. Are you at forgiveness with the Martin Luther King?
Yes. So would you read
Sure.
The first paragraph?
Sure. Martin Luther King Jr. in Strength to Love described it perfectly. Forgiveness is not an occasional act. It is a permanent attitude. Refer to that permanent and conditional state of the heart by the word forgiveness. In forgiveness, there is no longer any dualism, no offender, no, or forgiver. We forgive because we are forgiveness. We live forgivingly all the time. Pardon eliminates consequences. Forgiveness clears all accounts. Forgiveness keeps no ledger at all.
So here's an alternative. In ordinary forgiveness, we forgive a particular offense, but there's also something that you read about in the chapters called forgivingness. This is a virtue. And now it's not based on a particular act. It's become your actual attitude. There's no offender forgiver. You have just become forgiveness. It's also called, I remember growing up, I heard this, maybe you did too. Having a forgiving nature. Some people have a forgiving nature, so they just automatically keep forgiving. 70 times seven is the idea. They don't keep track of wrongs, no ledger, so there's not going to be any resentment or grudge. This is the psychological program of forgiveness. This is the spiritual virtue of forgivingness. So let's have one more paragraph. Esau, do you want to read this? And
Yeah.
then we're going to discuss.
This same distinction applies to love. For the virtue of loving kindness toward others to be real, it can't be based on whether we see lovability in the other. We love because we love, not because of how appealing someone is. We know our love for others is real when their moments, when their moments of unlovability no longer matter or trigger us. Forgiveness is a virtue that is.
Forgivingness. This is the forgiveness. See
Forgivingness,
right
I'm
here?
sorry. Yes, I saw that.
Yeah.
Pardon. Forgivingness is a virtue that is a habit of goodwill that is likewise a spiritual commitment. Forgivingness, like any virtue, originates in a transformation that has happened to us. And we are now continually showing its effects in our attitudes and actions. It becomes our go-to in the face of an offense.
Thank you. So, in both instances, loving and forgiving, it's become unconditional. Questions about this? You see the difference. This is all coming from a higher calling. It goes way beyond the psychological program to have healthy relationships. Now we've entered a spiritual realm. What's a spiritual realm? We do more than what's required. We go the extra mile. I forgive up one side and down the other. But here, even in this, you're feeling an offense. So let's go a little bit beyond this. Adam, do you want to read this part? You're on mute.
Yes, sorry. Yes, but wait. To love means no need to forgive at all. God never needs to forgive, since God is never offended. Juliana Norwich, showing. Offend, to do wrong so as to cause discomfort or injury, to cause dislike or anger. Anger, displeasure at justice, being upset because we believe we were treated unfairly.
Okay, thank you. And both of these are directly from the dictionary. So let's go back, because this statement right here is what got me thinking in a new way. It's a continuation of the idea of the forgiveness. So when I read this, Juliana of Norwich is a 14th century mystic, English mystic. She says, God never needs to forgive, since God is never offended. That led me to look up the word offended. To offend is to do wrong in such a way as to cause discomfort or injury, which God could never feel, or to cause dislike, which God would never dislike us because God is love, or anger. That led me to look up the word anger. Anger is displeasure at injustice, but God accepts that there's injustice, so he's not surprised or displeased. He has unconditional compassion toward us for our injustices. And anger means becoming upset because we believe we were treated unfairly. That also would not fit with the idea of God. And even if you don't think that there's a God, let's apply this to our higher self. So the result of looking at no need to forgive makes us say something like this. To love means there's no need to forgive. My best example, your five-year-old breaks the cookie jar when he was trying to take a cookie out before dinner. is probably not in the realm of this. Probably more like, oh boy, you never know what this kid's going to do. But I love him up one side and down the other. It wouldn't be in the realm of forgive. You might say, go to your room for a half hour, but you don't feel offended. You feel like that's part of having a kid. And I did the same thing when I was a kid. All right, let's go a little further. Then we're going to open up for some questions. Gail, would you read this part?
A given of life, people, even those who love us, may occasionally offend us, hurt our feelings, betray us in some way, be mean to us, take advantage of us, cause us some kind of harm. The fact that something is a given does not excuse it, only make it understandable. When we love them unconditionally, any of that leads to anger, grief, then ouch, and dialogue, but we don't hold it against them. When we don't love them, any of that can lead to blame, ill will, resentment, holding a grudge, demanding contrition or an apology, or retaliating. Thus, we do hold it against them. That is retaliatory and necessitates forgiveness.
So those are the same six of the letting goes. Remember the six letting goes. This is what you feel when you don't really love someone. Ill will, you want something bad to happen to them. You're holding on to resentment, grudge. You're making a demand that they debase their ego, and you're retaliating. When you act like that, you can't really say you love someone. Or another way of saying it is, if forgiveness means letting go of these six, then how can you say you love the person to begin with? That's why I said the love means there's no need to forgive at all. I know this sounds a little strange, but just stay with me. And then we're going to open up for discussion. And I could be completely wrong, because this is a whole new idea for me. So let's stay with it. Judith, would you read this? I'll pronounce the Greek word.
All right, the Greek word for forgive in the phrase, Father, forgive them, and in the Lord's Prayer, in the Sermon on the Mount, forgive us our trespasses is?
Afiemi.
Afiemi. It translates as to let go. This term conveys the idea of releasing someone from a doubt, a debt.
Debt.
Don't hold it against them. When we love others, nothing they do could necessitate forgiveness because the offense does not lead to holding it against them.
So, love unconditionally, don't hold it against them. Don't love unconditionally, hold it against them. You're not going to hold it against your child for breaking the cookie jar, but you might hold it against someone else that you don't really care about in the same way. Even the word forgive as used in the New Testament in Father, forgive them and forgive us our trespasses. The word used has to do with forgiving a debt, not the for kind of forgiveness that we refer to ordinarily. That's why in some versions of the Lord's Prayer, it doesn't say, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. It says, and this version is actually more correct, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Okay, now let's open it up for discussion. Does this sound like it fits for you, or do you have another idea?
Several.
You see where it all came from. This is an extension of the forgivingness. Comments? Jenny?
Well, I love this notion of living in forgiveness more of a state of being.
Forgivingness.
Yeah, forgivingness as a sort of a state of being. I'm quite challenged in a great way. Because I recognize that you are really raising what the standard of what it means to love. I mean, Doug and I are sitting here reflecting on our, as a couple, our arguments and our, you know, resentments and what the things we hold on to. And it's like, does that mean you don't love me? And, you know, so it is... an interesting, not interesting, a confronting standard around what love truly is. And I appreciate that. I'm challenged and contemplative about reflecting on that.
Okay, good. Yes, that is what it's about. It's much bigger than, there's something about forgiveness that has an elitism in it. Oh, okay, I forgive you. Kneel down in front of me and I forgive you. This is, forgiveness is in a category that's not in the dictionary of love. Neither for God or people. It's a big challenge. So please bring up your thoughts on this.
Oh,
And again, I have it all wrong.
Doug, you want to?
What's your first name?
This is Doug.
Hi, Doug. Go ahead.
One thing I thought of, and it's because I'm guilty of this, in your list of six things, I would add demanding understanding. And I say that because I recognize that I may not demand an apology or contrition, but I have expected understanding of why and how this hurt me, and have trouble sometimes letting that go. And so that just points out that I another place that I need to do more work.
When you say understanding, do you mean the other person gets it that he did wrong?
Yeah.
No, I don't mean that.
Okay, yes, that I do want to add that. Okay, thank you for bringing that up. Somebody else. Judith.
Well, Dave, it brought to mind the movie that's called Love Means You Never Have to Say You're Sorry. As
Yes, I
people,
did think of that when I woke
old
up this
movie,
morning.
Ally McGraw and Ryan, whatever his name is. But that always was puzzling to me. Love means you never have to say you're sorry.
Because the other person has already forgiven you. Because the other person is forgiveness. So that's why you wouldn't have to say you're sorry, because there is no ledger.
So this is at the higher stage of the enlightened.
Very high.
Okay, thanks.
The only way I notice it is I said to myself, well, look at the people that you really do love. Do you notice that you never have to forgive them? You just take it all in stride, whatever. Cookies are broken, whatever, I'll buy a new one. But nothing is going to ever make me not love you to pieces. Can we do that with more other people, not just our children? And if your own mother and father couldn't do this with you, if they held something against you, you have to ask yourself, well, did they ever really love me? Yeah, Jenny.
This is Doug again.
Okay, Doug.
I find it interesting that this word forgiving or forgiveness has the word for, which can mean before, and giving. Giving before it's actually required. Kind of a state of, as you say, a state of being rather than. And a commitment to living from that place. So I really
Yes.
appreciate this, and thank you.
Yeah, and you're reminding me of a quote from Romeo and Juliet, where Romeo says to Juliet, I gave it to thee before thou didst request it. I already gave you what you're asking. You don't even have to ask. Okay, Catherine.
Yes, you've been citing the cookie jar example, and I'm wondering how this applies in the rubber meets the road when people are in a marriage and one commits infidelity. How would you then put this love rubric over it? Because the other partner may really love their partner and not be able to forgive that. So I just kind of an extreme example, but I'm just running this through that
Could you use
dilemma.
a different, could you use a different word? He might not be able to forgive it. What would be another word for that? Because if forgive means I'm not blaming you, I don't want something bad to happen to you, and so forth. Is this what you mean?
I'm applying that one, and also you were saying if you with the cookie jar example, if I heard you correctly, were saying you love people, so you kind of let it go. So that's I'm just saying in more extreme cases, how does this I'm just applying it to that kind of a
Okay, well
situation.
let's go with what you're bringing up. The infidelity within a relationship leads to grief. I feel so sad that this happened. That's going to include anger. So you're going to say, ouch. And you're going to open a dialogue, probably in therapy, because it's going to be hard to do it on your own. And you're going to try to ask for
Understand.
a change. In other words, stop having the other relationship. And hopefully, you're going to reconcile so the relationship can become stronger. After all, it's not in the realm of forgiveness. It's in the realm of how do we work this out so that the relationship can survive.
That must be where Hillary went.
Well, and I'm just when you linked it to to unconditional love, that's where I got a little bristly about that. That if you really love that person, love means never having to say you're sorry, then your lack of forgiveness or whatever would be a comment on the amount of love. If you really loved me unconditionally, you'd say, okay, let bygones be gone, whatever. Let's rework this. So that was the only reason I was questioning that. So, and
Yeah,
typically, I
I
think,
get what
yeah.
I get what you're saying. Christina, I'll come to you in a minute, but Catherine reminded me of a scene from a film back in the 50s, and this is Barbara Stanwyck, and she's married to Paul Douglas. I'm dating myself. Anyway, she's having an affair. And Paul Douglas, the husband, finds out. And I noticed in the scene in which he confronts her, he says, I know what's happening. He says, I can't understand why you're doing this. I've been such a good husband. I bring my salary home every week to you. I don't go out with other women. I don't gamble. I don't drink. Why would you do this? She says, it isn't about you. It's about this totally empty, boring life that we have. I just had to do something different so I could feel something again. When someone answers like that, you've got the makings for, hey, we got to work something out here rather than I'm going to hate you forever for what you did. I could tell by the way the husband in the film was talking to her. He's not the type that's going to hold on to it as an endless resentment. He's really trying to understand it. It's not expecting understanding. It's the understanding happened all by itself. He's trying to get there. She's helping him because she is telling the truth. So it'll be more like that. Somebody else had a, somebody else had a hand up. Yeah, Christina, sorry. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I need to, I would like to explore what love is, because I feel the way we talk about it, it's like a faucet that you turn on and off, and you pick who you love and who you don't love, and it changes. And from a spiritual perspective, I guess I see love as something that you are, that you emanate, you express, and it's something that you live through, that emotion or that awareness. And I know there's a psychological component to all of this, and I'm trying to understand the bridge of it, like from the spiritual part of being love, and then the psychological part of turning it off and on, and I love you, but I don't love you, and I don't know, it's just...
Well, no, the love isn't the turning on and off. What's the turning on and off, which we've also noticed with our children, is the liking. I like you, I don't like you. We'll have to admit, we sometimes like our children, and other times we don't like them, but we always love them. Mm. Now, the best I could come up with, which is in your book, it includes caring. I care what happens to you, and I care for you. I take care of you. I'm committed to you in an ongoing, permanent way. I maintain a connection with you. I never push you away or break the link between us. And I show these three qualities by attentiveness to your feelings, by ongoing affection towards you, by appreciating you rather than resenting you, by accepting you entirely as you are rather than being what I want you to be, and allowing you the freedom to act in accord with your own deepest needs and wishes.
Thank you, Dave. That really helped. I think a lot of this is the language, how to talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
That helped a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, you can take a picture of this if you want.
Okay.
Jenny?
This is Doug again. So I want to throw into the conversation the word trust. And I do that because of this question about infidelity and recognizing that you know, in forgiveness, you also have to deal with this whole issue of trust. And how do you restore trust when truly something has occurred to break trust?
Yeah, let's add that to what we brought up here. Trust can be restored. Trust can be restored. It doesn't have to end permanently. Okay, I made the one mistake and I won't make it again. You can trust me. And I'm going to give you evidence that you can trust me. All of that would come from the work you would have to do on the infidelity. So I'm glad you brought that up.
I guess I'm
we don't have a lot of time left because We want to be sure we have enough time for when you meet, but go ahead, Kathy.
Oh, Kathy.
Well, we've been presenting retreats for engaged couples for over 40 years. And, you know, that love is never having to say you're sorry. We say love is having to, or, you know, ask for forgiveness, say you're sorry over and over again. And the little things that, you know, you just forgive without talking about it. Well, we think those things get swept under the carpet and build up and build up and cause problems that, I mean, I guess maybe the yes, I love you and I'm going to forgive you needs to be there, but it also needs to be talked about. And we say forgive, but don't forget, because you want to remember and avoid having, you know, falling again into the pattern of problems that have come up. So anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with all that. And I think that's very helpful when people are starting a relationship or continuing it and want to have it work. So thank you. Okay. I think we're ready for breaking up into small groups. And of course, our question is, how are you with forgiving? Easy, hard, can't at all, keep trying. Where do you stand when it comes to having that forgiving nature? Okay, Tim.
Great, thanks, Dave.
We're going to spend an extra 5 minutes at the end, as we did last time. Before I open it up for questions, I want to share something I came up with during the break. I'm going to share the screen again. You can request, sharing is not turned on. Do you want to turn the sharing on, Tim?
Oh, yeah, sorry, you left the room, huh? Let's fix that. All right, you're good to go.
I want to go back to, I didn't feel like we completely discussed the, see if I can find it here. Yeah. Can everybody see this?
Yes.
Okay, because mm-hmm. the question came up about love means never having to say you're sorry. So I do want to make a distinction. Barbara, would you read this out loud?
Sure. Love means never having to say you're sorry. This is not accurate because it is a given of life that we sometimes may offend. So it is the loving thing to say we're sorry when we did wrong. This leads to trust in both directions, from us to other and from the other to us. Love means never having to say you're sorry is accurate when we live with someone who loves us unconditionally, and we know we are always in the house of forgiveness. This is the house of love and trust. The goal in a relationship is both versions at once.
Mm. That's my view. It can't be just this. The other person can't be waiting for you to say you're sorry. That's not the full experience of love. You always know that forgiveness is current. And that's how a relationship becomes spiritually powerful. Okay. Questions about that part? Make sense? Joe or Kathy?
I think that part of forgiveness has to be forgiving yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. kind of where the asking for forgiveness comes in. You know, maybe that's just saying I'm sorry or saying, will you please forgive me or something. Sure. Somehow that has to be part of it too.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. All right, Ingrid. You're on mute.
It was mentioned in our group that this can feel kind of like a Pollyanna approach to life.
Okay.
I love your phrase just that came up just now. You live in the house of forgiveness or spirituality.
Yeah.
So I think it's living in that house that takes it out of the Pollyanna range.
Yes.
And maybe you can speak more to that.
It fits with the quote I gave last week in the movie The Nun's Story. Something, an injury has happened in the hospital, which is run by Belgian nuns in the Belgian Congo. And one of the natives says to Audrey Hepburn, "We have to retaliate because of what they did." And she says, "Our way is to forgive." In other words, this is the house of forgiveness, not the house of retaliation. We came here from Belgium to bring a new view, not the one that goes back to caveman times. And it reminds me of a quote of Saint Benedict in the in his rule for monks. I think it's like life-changing when I saw this quote. Our way is not the world's way. When you come in here to the Benedictine monastery, we don't do things the way they do things outside here. This is total forgiveness. You don't even have to worry about somebody retaliating. We're different here. That's why you came in here. So that in here would be the monastery of your own life. You're going to have to ask yourself, do I want to live differently from the way I was brought up, from the way I've seen a million movies, for the way things are happening right now in the news? Am I committed to a whole different way of living? That's the only way any of this can work. Did I answer what you brought up, Ingrid?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Somebody else? Alice? You're on mute.
Okay, I see. I'm sorry. I want to share an experience I had maybe 25 years ago about forgiveness, somebody forgiving me. And it's really kind of subtle, but it has stuck with me as a true example of forgiveness. I ha had a friend and I ran into her one day and she asked me to pray for her brother. He had a brain tumor and he was going to have surgery that week and wanted me to pray for him. And I said, "Oh, I will." And I did. And about 10 days later, I ran into her again. And I was off talking about whatever my agenda was and going on and about myself. And she gently touched my arm. And she said, "I'm going to stop you here for a minute because I want to tell you about my brother because I know you'll forget to ask. And when you get in the car to go home, you'll hate yourself for not asking how my brother was." Now, that to me, what that did for me was she believed in me. She trusted me. She knew how I would feel. And she was absolutely right. That's the way I am. I would have gotten in the car and beat myself up and hated myself because I was only thinking of myself. And it just made it the biggest impression on me, and I think it was her forgiveness came from her trust in who I was. And that's what I think we can do when we forgive someone, is somehow let them know that we trust they wouldn't have hurt us, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I just wanted to share that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you, Alice. By the way, instead of using the word forgiveness, see if you can use this phrase. It makes it easier. Hold it against you. I don't hold it against you. That's what forgiveness means. I don't hold it against you. If you use that phrase, it's easier to feel it come through. Alice?
Yeah, I thank you for that, because that was the other thing. She never made me feel guilty that I did that. She never would have said, well, there she went on and on, ever thinking to ask about my brother. You know, that to me was totally, totally loving. And thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah. Yeah, love would mean that you would never hold something against someone, while at the same time bringing it up, as Alice's friend did. Esau?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on the asking for some of your thoughts on when forgiving someone doesn't necessarily mean that you have to let them back in your life, right? Because I think there's this, at least I feel that there's this misunderstanding of that forgiveness means that we still have to be in some sort of relationship, and it can be a friend or a intimate partner or whatever. And because I've forgiven my friends, but I don't want them in my life anymore, as an adult boundary, right? But that doesn't mean I'm holding it against them anymore. Can you speak on that?
No, you're just protecting yourself from future injury. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, good. I'm in favor of that. Of what you're saying. I think that makes sense. Forgiveness doesn't mean that the relationship goes on. If you just can't trust that the other person is going to keep hurting you. Otherwise, what you've got is codependency, not love. Does this make sense to everybody, or do you? Took us a long time to figure this out. We weren't brought up this way.
And there's not a lot of people who are thinking this way.
No. Mm-hmm. So, I think you're on mute.
Tap to mute. Hi. The book is quite challenging. In fact, it's one of the hardest books that I've read. And I wanted to know, I did not want to know, that in getting through some of the chapters and the readings, that because of your past books, that I have a program in place to deal with these things that I find really difficult, mostly the inner critic chapter and the things that brought up and how much work I find I have to do. And so maybe that's the fear, which is the work, because all these years I've been working, but here I am saying it's like starting all over again. But I thank you for showing me where my work is, Dave.
All our work.
Our work.
Yeah. The ego doesn't like the idea of no more retaliating. After all, it was its favorite sport. It would be like giving up baseball. Okay, Ingrid?
I think the phrase came to my mind, put on the mind of Christ.
And that's what this is all about.
Yeah.
The mind, I added, and heart.
Yes.
Mind and heart of Christ. Yeah. That puts you into a whole different world. It's the world of spirituality and sanctity. It goes beyond what psychology could offer. Other ideas?
I was just going to offer that friend of mine who works for the Center for Action and Contemplation, where Richard Rohr and others teach, Barbara Holmes, who recently passed away, she was a core teacher there as well. One of his last interactions with her before she passed, her basically last words to him were, "Forgive everyone for everything." And so he got that tattooed on his arm as just a reminder, sort of a mantra, if you will, that was the house that he wanted to live in. So I just wanted to offer that. But I wonder, in some sense, just, doing a lot of spirituality and community, teaching it a lot, if it does boil down to that on some level,
Yeah, that's the bottom line.
True freedom.
And forgiving yourself.
Yes.
Well, yourself is included in everyone, right?
Yeah. Jenny?
Doug and I are reading a lot of Maurice Nicole psychological commentaries on the work of, I think it's Ouspensky and Gurdjieff. Fabulous, by the way. A lot of that work is about recognizing how mechanical and automatic we are. We all are. And that is really, really, really helpful with being able to give people space, and myself space, and other space, just to realize, oh my God, we're just all on automatic. There's so much like push this button and that reaction happens, or, and that is so, it's just like, just give each other the recognition that we are in a very dense, this is not the work, but this is my interpretation. We're in a really dense energetic field, We have this worldly way of retaliation and so much violence. I mean, it's a dense energy field that we're in, and we're trying to, be this sweet little green seedling popping up through that mud to turn into a lotus. And it's a struggle, and it helps me a lot. And I actually talk to myself a lot, like, okay, honey, you're trying. That was maybe a little off base there, on a good day. There are some times when I truly do beat myself up, but more and more I try to like talk to my little child inside that I know is just was beat up and is still working on healing, and just to remember everybody's in that state and how much automatic stuff is happening that people don't even know about. And that helps me a lot with forgiveness, I think, being in a forgiving place.
Yeah. Thank you, Barbara.
I just want to say, I have the commitment to not react in those ways. And sometimes it's hard to actually live that existentially. And I think taking the pause is so important between the trigger and the response to get us out of our natural monkey mind reactivity. And just like, that's not what I want to do. Just take a breath and then respond with loving kindness instead of the ego retaliatory, baseline. That makes
and
sense.
I would add one thing to that. If you didn't get a chance to take a breath and you did retaliate, always go back and apologize. I retaliated, and I'm working on myself not to do that. So what's going to help me is to eat crow. and go back and apologize. I should not have retaliated. That's not who I want to be. What I'm supposed to be doing is say, ouch, open the dialogue, and so forth.
Yeah, I'm forgiving
if that's what
myself.
you want to do. Or you could do what I said last time. You could say, I intend to go right on retaliating, so watch out. Just be honest. Yeah, we do want the pause, take a breath. But if the retaliation has already happened, then yeah, go back and apologize. It's going to make you stronger.
Yes, I've always apologized in this situation, and sometimes they don't hear it, and so you can't do anything about that.
That doesn't matter. No, all that matters is you put it out there. That's important. That's what Doug brought up. You know, they have to show that they understand it. That's aggression. We don't want that. If they don't get it, they don't get it. We just then put them in our prayer life. Esau?
Yeah.
Let's make this our last question.
Prior to these conversations, I had more of an understanding of forgiveness as a happening versus a doing. And I feel like what I'm hearing here is more of a doing, right? Letting go. And that's my interpretation. And I'm reminded of the definition of the word patience, which is to suffer. And I feel like the forgiveness process can be something that requires a lot of patience. I was wondering if you could share like an action that is, if I'm right about what I'm interpreting, is what if what's a way to actually act on practice letting go? Like, what does that actually look like versus just saying it and thinking that I can say it enough times to do it?
You would take those six automatic triggered responses, such as I'm holding a grudge, I have resentment, blame, ill will, need to retaliate, demand that the other person apologize or show that he gets it. And you would have to work on letting go of those one at a time in yourself. And you're right, it's both a happening and a doing. The happening is the grace to forgive. That's a gift of the Holy Spirit. I'm going to forgive rather than retaliate. That comes from a divine source. So I'm thankful for that. And I'm going to do what it takes to show that that's really happened in me. How do I show that? Letting go of the six practices of the ego. Make sense to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, next week we have our grand finale. So I'm going to go on to this. Spiritual practice of dealing with retaliation. Okay, Tim, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Judith.
Yeah, Judith,
yes, thanks.
Closing words.
Thanks to everyone. And yes, Dave said the finale is next week. We're going to be, our assignment suggestion is the chapter 9. And then there's an epilogue. And there's an appendix with quotations for meditation. So you can check that out before. And Sue brought up the fact that it is hard reading, Dave. I've got a lot of things underlined here. It is not an easy read. So spend some time with it this week. I know I am. All right. And let's unmute and say thanks to Dave. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you,
See you
Jamie.
Soon. Dave, I'm not sure what the thing was you wanted me to respond to, but you
just
know.
The whole idea of what we brought up today.
Okay, cool.
Does it make sense to you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I especially liked your clarification after coming back from the break. I think that was really helpful.
About them never having to say you're sorry.
Yeah, because it's in the same way that contemplatives throw the word love around a lot. And sometimes, like, I have a theologian friend of mine who defines love as empathetic or sympathetic action in response to another. Like, it's a very specific definition of love, but mystics often talk about it in a much more ethereal, pervasive, like all-encompassing way. And if we do that, sometimes we forget the person-to-person actionable love, and vice versa. If we only focus on that, then we can't talk about love as a ground of our being, right? And so in the same way, forgiveness can be one of those things, or, oh, well, I just live in the house of forgiveness, I don't actually have to forgive you. I say it out loud. I don't need to say it out loud, right? So that I thought that was really a helpful way to say it. I'm reminded of this comic who did some stand up around in the wake of Black Lives Matter. And he had said, there's this backlash for All Lives Matter. And he'd said, it's like when your girlfriend asks you, do you love me? And your response is, baby, I love everybody. You know what I mean? So you can sort of overlook the personal, and then, but the question for me is always more non-dual. How do we bring the universal and the personal kind of together, the particular and the universal? So I thought that was done really well. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's my response. So
yeah, I
David,
totally agree.
Do you have a poem?
No, I have to leave, but we'll do a poem.
I do too. Yeah, I've got a meeting here in
okay.
5 minutes. So
all right.
Okay.
See you guys later.
Take care, y'all.
Alrighty.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye.